She better be grateful that the Eagles win a Super Bowl this year. That's all I'm saying.
Jeffrey, don't jinx it. Everyone on our show is going to blame you if you keep talking about it.
Oh, sorry. Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Welcome to Sell or Die. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling, and on my right,
I'm Jen Gleckow, founder and CEO of Sales in a New York Minute.
And today we're going to help you sell more, earn more, do more, be more, get your boss fired, and put $1 million in the bank. No, not get your boss fired, but at least fire your boss up to a point where he or she is willing to support you in a way that they've never been supporting you before.
That's right. And we have a great show today. We're talking to Kelly Roach. She is a business growth coach and best-selling international author.
But her claim to fame.
Yes.
She was a cheerleader in the NFL.
That's correct.
I love that kind of stuff. That is a riches to riches program. But I think it takes a special talent to do what she does. She's a fascinating and amazing woman. And you're going to have a great time with her today. But we're going to kick it off by talking about New Year, correct?
That's correct. So it's the New Year, and I was looking at apps online in the App Store, and one of the apps that was like the most popular app, which baffles my mind, is this Motivator app, with the idea being that it's the New Year and you want to lose weight. So why don't you bet Motivator that you're going to lose weight by taking a picture of how much you weigh now, inputting your goal, giving them your credit card, with a minimum $250 allowance charge.
Oh my gosh.
And if by the date you set, you do not hit your goal weight, they will automatically ding your credit card.
OMG.
Well, that is ridiculous. That's such a scam.
Now, wait a minute. What do you get if you do hit your target weight?
You get Jack.
You lost your weight.
No, you get Jack.
You get, no, in reality, you lost your weight, and the company is...
But the company's not giving... That sounds like a great deal for the company.
Exactly.
A perfect deal for the company.
Exactly. Right?
That's why they call it Motivator. They're motivating themselves to try to convince you to give them their...
What a freaking scam. I see this all the time with all these coaches coming out there right now saying, I'm going to change your outlook for the new
year. Have
your
best year ever.
Yeah. Like, give me the actual tools I need. Don't sell me a scam.
Here's the deal. If you're trying to have a good year or have a great year, the only way that you can do it is do it for yourself. You don't do it for somebody else. If you want to have all you want to have is a better year than you had last year. I mean, that's how I look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you improve, if you beat your own personal best, then that's what you're really...
Or whenever your best year was.
Yeah. So you try for that. That's very important. But for me, I found it lucky. I don't set goals or set any kind of achievement processes on New Year's. I think about what I want.
Mm-hmm.
February the 11th is my birthday. So I'm thinking about what I want from January the 1st until February the 11th. And then I set what I want to achieve this year. It's not a goal. It's not a resolution. I look at my achievements and what do I really want to achieve, and I put that down.
The Motivator app sort of operates on the same principle that gyms operate on. Not
right.
Like gym the name, but like
right.
GYM.
Got it.
Because they get
thanks
a lot
for that
of
clarification, Doug.
They get a lot of subscriptions at the beginning of the new year as well, because people set the resolutions, obviously.
Yep.
And gyms understand, and actually their business model needs people not to show up because they don't want the gym to be too crowded.
Exactly.
Right.
So they bank on people spending money for the membership and then essentially losing interest but being locked into to a deal and it being spent money. I think that's the big thing. Like with Motivator, once you make the bet, you've already sort of factored that money into your, like in 3 months, you won't remember 250, you know, it'll already be spent money.
Right.
And so
exactly.
It's not a motivator.
Well, that's a good question, actually. Is it a motivator? So we work with a lot of sales reps and a lot of them are motivated by commission, but not all of them are motivated by money.
So I'm calling you out on that. Why don't you tell me what's more important?
Let's talk about some of the other things that they can be motivated
by. Tell me what they're going to pay their mortgage payment with other than money. And the answer is, I think it's money.
Absolutely. But at the beginning of someone's sales career, they're not only thinking about money. They're
right, because they're living
about,
with their mother.
They're thinking about growth.
They don't have to worry about a mortgage payment.
They're thinking about title. They're thinking about promotion. They're mm-hmm. thinking about growth.
I agree. I totally agree with that. They need all of those, what we would call perks, mm-hmm. in order to have more incentive to stay on the job. That and money will keep them there.
Yeah.
Yeah, money. I think money motivates people to a certain point. Mm-hmm. I think for some people, once they achieve a monetary goal of whatever level of comfort they'd like to provide for their life, mm-hmm. then they, it's sort of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Then they start yeah. to think about, okay, I've got enough money to do, to live comfortably. Now what?
Right.
When you read Maslow's hierarchy of needs, I doubted the authenticity of it since the word Milky Way appears in there several times. but I think that you're correct. What happens is they reach a plateau and they become apathetic because it's enough for them. They don't understand what's next.
So we want to know what motivates you. Yeah. Let us know on Twitter by tweeting at Gittimer or at Jen in a New York Minute, or even email us, sellordie@gittimer.com.
Yeah, what is your motivator? Is it money or is it something else? Do you want a better title? Do you want a different boss? Do you want what do you want as the key driver for you?
Maybe you want to be the boss.
To wake up in the morning and achieve. That, I think that's what mm-hmm. it's about, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to wake up happy. I want to love my family. I want to love my, I want to be healthy, and I want to achieve. So what are the drivers that are going to help me do that? And in my opinion, just humble opinion, A, you have to love what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the money in the world is not going to create love for job. You're going to walk in and you hate your job. You hate your boss. You hate your people. You hate your customers. You hate your company. Seriously? You're doing that for money?
It's not worth it.
No, it's never worth it. And you'll only rise to a level of mediocre anyway because you won't really put your heart into it.
You have to love what you're doing and you have to love what you're selling.
Right. Weren't you making a lot of money when you quit?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And what happened?
Because I didn't like it anymore. You could give me all the money in the world and as
well,
obnoxious.
Well, all the money in the world. That's all, yeah, I might say another month for that.
No, and it sounds pretty obnoxious, but I didn't want to wake up miserable. Yeah. It wasn't worth, the money wasn't worth it to me at a certain point. I didn't want to wake up and hate what I was doing.
So
this
how,
wasn't worth it.
I guess the question is for sales managers especially, like how do you identify what someone's major motivator is?
Why don't you ask them?
Yeah, that's what I would do. I would ask them in a private meeting that's relaxed, maybe over lunch or over coffee or maybe even dinner, where you talk to them about them and not about the company. Well, we have an 11.5% goal this year and you're numbers are set because we have confidence that you can do it. That's bullshit. I want to know what will drive that person to achieve 15% or 20% growth.
So it's interesting. I used to hire a lot of former educators, and I would ask them, what do you care about? What motivates you? What inspires you? And in addition to money, or as an aside to money, one of the things they really cared about was impacting the students. So in a classroom, when there were a teacher, they could impact 25 students. But selling our services, they could impact 10,000 students a year, 20,000 students a year. And so instead of making their goals around strictly around money, I would make it around how many kids are you going to impact this year?
But I would, in an interview, I think I would never say money would be a motivator.
Right.
You know, because so I guess like.
I like people.
Yeah. Like, you'd always kind of like, because you don't want to be seen as somebody who's just in it for the money. But at the same right. time, that is, it is a, again, I think it's a motivating factor to a point for some people.
Exactly.
Just by the way, if you're interviewing for that job, you can make money one of the motivators, but you also want to be able to help the company. You want to help your customers and you want to make sure that you're in an environment that challenges you to learn more.
Yeah, but it has to be genuine. If you're just spitting back Jeffrey's answers and they don't believe that because it's inauthentic, you're not going to win on that interview.
Yeah, exactly, Jenna. You have to think about these things. Like people have to sit back in a quiet space, in a quiet time, and think about what motivates them. Because I think, I've seen people be in a job for a long time and think, oh, if I get that one more promotion or that one more raise, I'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And then they go, oh, wait, I'm not okay. What's going on? And they have to think about, like, why is this job not making me happy?
Right.
And once you discover why it's not making you happy, you actually have the key to what can make you
happy.
But
it's not the job's job to make you happy. You need to be internally happy. And once you're happy, you can be happy at the job. But if you're not happy first, it doesn't matter what job you have, in my opinion.
Yeah, so there's it's definitely a complex issue.
One of the reasons that we're focusing on the new little gold book of Yes Attitude is because over the years, I've come to the conclusion that if your attitude isn't right, I don't care what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be successful at it. And attitude is so foundational and so fundamental to your success that you literally can't start a job or start a project without it. If you're working with other people or you're trying to collaborate or you're trying to interact with a customer or engage a customer, what kind of engagement is it going to be if all you're doing is moaning about the weather?
Mm-hmm.
If your attitude isn't right, then you will surely make the Motivator app very, very rich.
I'm totally in agreement with you there.
Who's our guest?
All right, so let's talk about our guest. She is an amazing woman, Kelly Roach, and she's a former NFL cheerleader turned Fortune 500 executive, and now she's the CEO of Kelly Roach International. She built her business on the side of her corporate job, so she was literally working full-time and building a business. Kelly then doubled her business when her daughter was a newborn. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, she basically has taken every obstacle and jumped over it.
Oh, yeah.
Literally jumped over it.
100%. So in addition to her entrepreneurial success, Kelly is also the host of top-rated podcast Unstoppable Success Radio and the author of the 11 times international bestseller Unstoppable, 9 Principles for Unlimited Success in Business and in Life. She leads online coaching programs and offers private mentoring as well. Let's welcome the great Kelly Roach.
Hear, hear. Kelly, welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me today.
Oh, it's a doggone pleasure.
Here.
We kept checking our mail for those autographed copies of Unstoppable, but it just didn't
Checked, actually. There's nothing at the door.
Well, my team needs to get on that.
Exactly. And as a Philadelphia person, I'm assuming that the Invincible came from Unstoppable or vice versa.
Yes, Invincible, Unstoppable. We're trying, right?
Right.
We have the Philly spirit. We may fail sometimes, but we always come back fighting.
Exactly.
How many fails did you have to get in Philly? Come back?
In Philly, you only need one. If you win one time, everyone remembers that. You can lose 100 times. We don't care. I can tell you this. If the Eagles win the Super Bowl this year, there will be 3 million people at the parade.
Wow.
Guaranteed. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Every old, like I went to the 1960 game when they beat the Packers. That's the last time the Eagles won a championship. So I'll be at that parade. That's a guarantee.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Philly fans are absolute lunatics. So
exactly.
I can't even imagine.
Exactly.
I can't even imagine.
Well, here's and the most interesting thing is that they'll have something in the paper about, well, we don't know if there's going to be enough portable toilets. It doesn't matter. Philadelphia fans pee anywhere.
You're telling our secrets here. People outside Philadelphia don't know how bad it is around here.
So do you live in the Philadelphia metropolitan area still?
Yeah, I live about 45 minutes outside the city.
That's cool. That's totally cool.
Yeah, real cool.
Yeah, we were just there a few weeks ago. We went to
Jeffrey's favorite,
yeah.
The Reading Terminal.
Yeah.
Oh,
Tommy
good.
Dinick's,
yeah.
Tommy Dinick's roast beef sandwich. No,
yeah.
Actually,
and then he gets the
sandwich.
Pickles from the Amish people and brings them to the sandwich place.
Exactly.
It's quite funny. They all know him.
If they know me well
or
enough,
they're
now
like
they go
five
like,
times a year and they know him.
Oh,
well, that's that guy.
Anyway.
So, Kelly, I noticed a trend in your bio. It seems like you are accomplishing these amazing things while you have these crazy busy moments in your life going on. So you doubled your business while your daughter's a newborn. How did you do that?
Yeah, you know what? It's really interesting. When I started my business, I was working as a Fortune 500 executive. I had 17 branches and a team of 100 people, and I was responsible for all of the P&L, you know, profitability, sales, growth, you know, strategy, all of that. And one of the reasons why I decided to start my business was that I recognized that on the corporate path. There was never, you weren't ever building something where you got to a point where you could really take a step back and enjoy, you know, something that you had built. It was more so, you know, you keep getting promoted and promoted and promoted. And even though you keep making more money, you have less and less and less time to spend it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And was it more pressure as well when you make more money?
I mean, I pretty much thought I was going to have a heart attack by the time I was 40, which is one of the other reasons why I started, you know, my own business. But yeah, so, you know, I think the whole thing is one of the reasons why I wanted to start my own business was I wanted to build something where I could use my brain and leverage my skills to build something that over time, it ran like a well-oiled machine. It was based on systems. I retained good people and could create something that as the business grew, I could do less instead of more, which I don't think is possible in a job because, you know, in most instances, especially if you're moving up the corporate ladder, of course, as you're paid more, you're expected to put in more hours and all of that. And you know, that's fine. That's, mm-hmm. you know, that's that model, right? And so, you know, one of the big life learnings for me was when I started my business and I was working full time, I always kind of had in the back of my mind, you know, I have a handicap, you know, I can only put 3 hours a day into my business. I'm never going to be able to succeed, you know, whatever the case. And I finally one day I flipped a switch and I was like, I will not use that as an excuse. That will not be the reason that I won't succeed. And in fact, it'll be the reason that I will. And when I flipped that switch and I changed that mindset and I said, you know what, I'm going to really gain an understanding of the critical, you know, most important things that need to happen that are going to drive growth and figure out how to do them with the time that I have instead of trying to expand the time that I was putting in to do that. And making that change, like changed my entire life because it's really that quality over quantity using the 80-20 rule, really focusing on strategy versus simply massive action. And I feel like that's one of the biggest ways that I help my clients now today is helping them to understand, you know, you can put two people next to each other that are running businesses, one that's working 80 hours a week and one that's working 20. And in many instances, the one that's working 20 is taking home more income, more profit, and enjoying a much better quality of life. It's not about the hours. It's about the strategy. It's about using your brain. It's about being ruthless with your time. And so for me, I always say, the greatest blessing that I ever had was starting my business while I was working full time because I didn't have the luxury of getting sloppy. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Of course.
Totally.
How old is your daughter?
She's 3.5.
And do you have other kids or is that the only one?
No, she's our only one. Yep. Madison Rye.
Cool.
Pretty name.
Yeah, really nice. Daughters are the best, by the way. I have tons of them.
Oh, she's the light of our life. She's amazing. How many daughters do you have?
I have 4 daughters and 4 granddaughters.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Yeah. There were 5 kids in my family. So I came from a lot of craziness. I definitely understand the chaos and the fun that comes with a big family.
Of course. So talk about your business as a Fortune 500 company employee for just a couple of minutes. As you got each promotion, how did they tell you? What happened and how did your employees respond to that?
Yeah. So, you know, my first couple of promotions were really tough, right? Because I was a new college graduate. I was, you know, 21 years old when I started my corporate career and I moved into management at 22. So you can imagine that didn't go over very well when a lot of the people in my first couple of promotions that I was managing were, you know, my parents' age and, you know, had been there for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, you know, et cetera. So in the beginning, it was really tough because I had to really prove my value and worth to these people and show them that I'm going to help you make more money. I'm going to help you be more successful. I'm going to help you to love your job again and actually, you know, get better return on investment for the effort you're putting out. So in the beginning, it was really tough, but I did show them that value and they did see better results and they did make more money. And I think that was a big catalyst for why I was, you know, able to keep moving up. You know, then the promotions as I moved up through the organization were more about taking on turnarounds, right? So, you know, a promotion is never going to be handing you an area that's doing well, right? Which, you know, but that's a great thing. And that was such a great experience for me because obviously when I'm now working with entrepreneurs and small business owners, you know, typically people are coming to you saying, I need help. We're stuck, you know? So it was great, great experience for me to take over all these turnaround areas that were in a decline or underperforming or weren't profitable, and really doing the problem solving to understand why. And then the rebuilding to assemble the right team, to turn around the people that we could turn around, to get the right metrics and the right focus and the right strategy in place. And it was a lot of fun to see it go from decline to growing year over year, underperforming. Or, you know, I had branches that, you know, I had one that was on like an 8-quarter decline, you know, when I took it over, and it took me, you know, 90 days to get them profitable and growing, wow. You know, in, yeah. in a straight upward trajectory. So I love the problem solving aspect of it. I love the strategy, and I really, really love connecting with people and getting them to believe in themselves. I think that's half the battle is, you know, when someone starts losing, you know, a lot of times it's that mindset. They've lost confidence in themselves. They've lost belief in what they're doing. And if you can get to the heart of that and get people to see that you believe in them, they should believe in themselves, they can win, there is a path forward, I think just about anything is possible, you know, and that's what I love the most about that type of work, and also the work that I'm doing now.
What was your leadership style when you were coaching all of these turnaround people or salespeople or whoever you were coaching in your Fortune 500 career? How matter of fact did you have to be? How Philadelphia did you have to be in order to be able to make your success happen?
Well, yeah, so that's an interesting one. So that's actually a funny question. So I almost got myself fired in the beginning because I was a little too Philadelphia. because, you know, your biggest strength is also always your biggest weakness, right?
For those of you who don't know what too Philadelphia is, it means that you wake up in the morning and boo your own employees. But yeah. Go ahead.
Nah, I didn't boo them, but I, you know, I'm the kind of person that I'm not real about the chit chat and the BSing and all of that. I'm like, hey, you know, let's make some money. Let's win. You know, let's do the work. Let's get the job done. Let's get the heck out of here. You know what I mean? So, you know, in the beginning, I probably came on a little too strong. My first year as a leader. And then over the years, I really learned to have lots of different tools in my leadership belt and to really do a better job assessing which tool to pull out at different times and in different situations and with different personalities to, you know, find a tool that was a match for the person and the situation in front of me. And I think that in leadership, that's so incredibly important. That was a huge life lesson for me. And, you know, I think, again, you know, that's something that hugely prepared me for the work that I'm doing now. Because if I look at, you know, 100 of my clients, each one of those 100 are very, very different. And so I'm coaching them differently. And while they need to be doing a lot of the same things, the way that I'm going to get through to them to get them to take action and make an impact is going to be a little bit different in each scenario.
And so your management style, your leadership style morphed over a period of time?
So much, so much. I mean, I'm so, so different today than I was when I started. And I think that's just maturity and wisdom and evolution. Yeah. And
but you didn't become totally benevolent, did you? I mean, come on. There's like three benevolent people in Philadelphia. Don't be one of them.
Yeah. No, I think it's more just smarter assessment of what's going to actually work in the situation, because it's not about being right. It's about accomplishing the end goal, yeah. You know? And so just being able to switch into different gears, which I think in the beginning, when you're young in your leadership journey, you're like, this is my setting and this is who I am and this is how I lead and this is what it's going to be. And then over time, you're like, you know what? I can make this job a whole lot easier for myself, you know, by being more flexible and smarter in my approach. So, you know, it just evolves over time. You get different tools in the tool belt.
That's cool. So you have this amazing job. You're doing really well. You keep getting promoted. I assume it comes with more and more pay. And then you start this business on the side. How did you know when it was time to leave?
Yeah. So I was doing multi six figures before I left. And I was the breadwinner. And when my husband and I started dating, we had agreed that we weren't going to put our kids in daycare. That was kind of something that we had talked about long before I found out I was pregnant with Madison. And so that was always in the plan. It was something that was important to us. And so I think when you become pregnant and you see that in front of you and you kind of have a deadline looming, you know, you get more focused than you ever would be in your life. And it's so funny because I saw that for myself, and I see that with my team all the time. I think a lot of people, when they find out a staff member is pregnant, they get a little scared. They're like, oh man, are we like going to lose this person? Are you going to lose focus, whatever? And I know for me, like when I found out I was pregnant, I was the best I've ever been, because you know, you have a deadline, like you need to get stuff done. And I see that with my team members as well. I'm like, well, we're going to get a great year out of you this year, aren't we? And they're like, yep. You know, they know what has to be done before they leave to make sure it's not a disaster when they come back. So yeah, I mean, I think one of the questions I get from entrepreneurs all the time is, you know, should I quit my day job to start my business? And I say, no, you shouldn't. And, you know, I firmly believe that to be successful, staying in the game. And I mean, we have to remember 85 to 95% of businesses still fail. Right? And they fail because of cash flow. And they fail because they don't truly understand sales and marketing and leadership, right? And so, you know, I say, you know, go out and learn how to be an effective marketer, learn how to sell, you know, and you know, differentiate yourself in your space, get your cash flow going to the point where you can make the investments in your business that you need to make, hiring, right? Advertising, getting the tools and resources that you need, get good at what you're doing, have a handle on it so that you don't crash and burn. Because I think too many people put the cart, you know, before the horse, and they're out of the game before they're ever in it. Mm-hmm.
So when you decided to start your business, you took a risk, and you obviously you were doing it while you were doing your job. So
yes,
you're only working 60 or 80 hours a week, correct?
Yeah. Well, I actually let my company know. I was very straightforward.
Cool.
And, you know, I let them know and I said, hey, you know, this is what I'm going to be doing. You know, I'm making, you know, pennies here for the contribution of, you know, millions and millions of dollars that I'm adding to the bottom line every year. And it's not, you know, getting me to where I want to be. And I knew, you know, we're a public, you know, when you're a Fortune 500 company, you can look up the salary of the CEO, right? Because it's a public entity with stockholders. So, you know, I knew what the salary of the CEO was, and I knew they weren't going to be paying a VP more money than they were paying the CEO. So it really wasn't a choice at that point. I knew where I wanted to be financially, and I knew that there wasn't a path forward to get it there.
Was there one trigger that said, I'm leaving here?
No, it was a lot of things, but I do think one of the biggest things was like health and wellness and quality of life, you know? So for me, I was an aerobics instructor. I was a competitive dancer my whole life. I was an All-American All-Star cheerleader. I was an NFL cheerleader. Fitness and exercise had always been a huge part of my life and just my passion, something fun that I enjoyed to do. And, you know, I think it's such an important part of staying, you know, physically and mentally well. And when it got to the point where I was like gaining weight and never seeing my family and, you know, just, I was looking down the road. I was looking at the future and saying to myself, you know, this is not going to work. Like, I can dial this clock forward and see that I'm not going to be happy with where it goes. You know what I mean?
So many entrepreneurs now make the excuse that they're working so hard on their business that they don't have time for fitness. How do you manage that in, and how do you make time for it?
Sure. So I actually see fitness as a business growth strategy, and I teach it that way to my clients. And I actually pay for gym memberships for all of my employees in my coaching company.
So do we.
Oh, you do. Yeah. So you guys see. So you get it too. You know, I believe that your mental and physical health and your energy level is what drives results. So if you're not doing that, then obviously you're going to get subpar results, right? So, you know, to me, investing in increasing my energy, which comes directly from physical movement, is going to increase my sharpness and my ability to achieve the business goals. And I know that for myself, and I know that for my team. I actually encourage them to take time during the workday to go work out at the gym a couple times a week. And I actually build it into my day as well. Like, my trainer's coming here, she'll be here at 1:45 today. So I build it into the workday, and I do treat it as a business growth objective.
That's awesome.
So let's say you're fit and you can do 100 pushups and you can run the 10K in under an hour. Now the question is, you've got to work on your business. So are there strategies that you have found for your digital training, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we used a ton of Facebook ads. I've used Facebook ads for almost 5 years now, and that's, you know, a huge client generation tool for us. And live streaming has been very good. Our podcast generates a lot of business for us. So the podcast is huge. And that's also a big email list builder as well, because we use the text opt-ins, and that's been really, really effective. Webinars.
I'm sorry, say that slower again. Use what?
Text opt-ins?
Yeah. Text opt-ins. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like we create content upgrades that go with the podcast episodes. And then we're able to merge a lot of our listeners onto the email list by getting them to text in to get the text upgrade, the content upgrade. Mm-hmm. And then they become a part of the email list and then, you know, join programs or whatever that way. So that's been really big.
Did they get it for free?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you say text this to number 8475 and say the word Kelly and you got it?
Exactly.
Just so for like our diehards out there, we're going to be doing this in 2018. So get ready.
Okay.
Oh, it's the best. It's the best because it's so convenient for the listeners, for you guys listening today. It's super convenient for you because we know you're on your phone. We know you're multitasking. We know you're out and about, right? And so you can just shoot over a quick text. And what's great about it is the content upgrades are not only a recap of the core principles covered in that episode, but then next steps as far as what to do with it. And again, we know that most people aren't just sitting at their desk, you know, still listening to a podcast, taking notes. So it's a huge value for the listener because they're going to get that recap and they're going to get that in their inbox so they can follow up on it later, knowing that most of them are probably not in a position at that moment that they're listening to the show to either take notes or recap or whatever for themselves. So that's huge. And you guys will see that. I think your listeners will really, really appreciate it. And it's definitely great in terms of moving people into funnels and closing more clients as well.
There are 9 principles in your book, and I'm sure, like I have 12.5 principles in the Little Red Book of Selling. Principle number 8, if you can make them laugh, you can make them buy. I have certain things that I just dwell on because I know they are at the fulcrum point of someone's success as a salesperson. So which one or ones of your principles would you say is the foundational or non-negotiable?
Sure. Well, I would say stop resenting the 1% and join them. Because
I think that's
the very beginning of the book. Because I think it's all about, you know, if you're bitter, if you're angry, if you're resentful, or, you know, if you're focusing on comparison instead of collaboration, you know, that your life is going to reflect that. And your bank account will too. And I think that, you know, there's been this whole movement, you know, to like have resentment towards the 1%. You know, the vast majority of all millionaires, you know, were self-made millionaires. By starting growing their own businesses. So how dare we, you know, resent those people, you know, when that's what people are striving to get to and to be and achieve. You know, if you look at all of us that are at that level, you know, I started my family, we were just above the poverty line, you know, and now I'm in that group. And so, you know, it's possible for anyone. It's just about mindset and a willingness to have the discipline and the grit to do the work. You know,
I'm actually against the phrase, if I can do it, you can do it. But because not everybody can do it. However, you did it. And now you're sharing with other people how they can do it or how mm-hmm. it can be done. And I think mm-hmm. that's, to me, that's the biggest benefit that you offer people.
Yeah. And it's believing in yourself. And that's why I always, you know, one of the things that I talk about all the time on my show and, you know, my live streams and stuff is that, you know, mindset always has to come before mechanics. You can have two people doing the same mechanics of running and growing a business and one's broke and the other's a millionaire. Mindset always has to come first. It's the intention, it's the energy, it's the lens through which you're looking at everything. That's what's going to determine ultimately the results that you're going to get.
How did you create your positive mindset?
You know what? I think it's something that I've worked really hard at over the years. You know, I think that mindset is a lifelong journey in working on yourself.
Mm-hmm. Are there books that you recommend? Are there things that you read that triggered something?
Oh, so many things. I mean, I constantly, I think that mindset is something that can be intentionally cultivated. Constantly Wayne Dyer, Tony Robbins, Joe Vitale. So many people. I'm constantly reading things to reshape my mindset and to kind of resharpen my sense of total ownership, because I think that's ultimately what it is taking total ownership for everything in your life, right?
Yeah.
I think that that's a journey that lasts from the day you're born to the day you die. I don't think it's something that anyone is born just totally on one setting of being positive at all times. I think a lot of positivity comes from gratitude. And, you know, gratitude is a perspective about life, and it's, you know, taking the time to work on cultivating that perspective and that attitude. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I know exactly what you mean.
We are so on the same page about all of this. It's amazing. I feel like you're in my head.
And hammering our 8-year-old daughter in the area of gratitude at this very moment, because she has somewhere between none and just a little.
Yeah. We just started working on it with Madison, and you know, it's tough, and it's especially tough, I think, when you've done well and you can provide a lot. And that's what's a little scary. I think that you have to almost work even harder to make sure that you're intentionally cultivating that attitude.
Yeah, 100%.
Because, you know, when you grow up with lack, as I did, you take nothing for granted, right? Like, because when you get something, you're like, oh my God, right? It's this big thing. But when you are born into a situation where you're given a lot, you definitely, I believe, need to really be taught, and that has to be instilled. And as a parent, you have to really work hard at that. So I agree. Billy and I are really at the same place with Madison too, in trying to instill that in her.
She better be grateful that the Eagles win a Super Bowl this year. That's all I'm saying.
Jeffrey, don't jinx it. Everyone on our show is going to blame you if you keep talking about it.
Oh, sorry. I can't help it.
He is so freaking excited. It's insane.
We all are. You know what? But I'll go back again. You know, look at the transformation in the attitude and energy of that team.
Yep.
Based on the leadership and the character, the integrity, the mindset, the humility.
They're having fun.
Yeah.
They're having fun.
And they show up with confidence now like never before.
Yes. Yes. So it's not just the luck of having a couple of good games. It's like there's a transformation at the root of that organization that's running through everything that goes back to the leadership. And I think that that's a really important lesson, you know, to all of us reflect on, because we have so much impact and influence on the people around us in such a big way that we don't even realize. I mean, a lot of times you can look at your organization or your team and you could be disappointed in someone's performance or in your team's execution of something. But, you know, what I always try to do is like figure out like, well, what did I do or not do that led to this? Because at the end of the day, you own it, right?
Yep.
Like it's you.
Absolutely.
I'm going to tell you about the Eagles just in one sentence. They have leadership on the field and on the sidelines. And that's the key to their success. Mm-hmm. They are in sync and they are in harmony. There's no,
agreed.
You don't read about the two guys are fighting each other in the locker room. None of that crap. There's camaraderie.
Yes, I completely, completely agree.
So, Kelly, before you go.
Yeah, before we say your time is up.
You have this amazing blueprint on your website that I really want to dig into a little bit. It's from zero to $100,000. Mm-hmm. And it's a blueprint for entrepreneurs of how to get there. And so first I want to know, why 100K? What's the magic about 100K?
Yeah. So, you know, 100K is not going to make you rich, and it's not going to allow you to check off some box and be able to retire. But what 100K does do that's very, very important in a small business is it allows you to hire your first, you know, part-time person or two, and it allows you to spend money on advertising, and it allows you to fund that through the cash flow of the business without debt, which then allows you to springboard up to the next level of really taking home home, a nice income, expanding your team, expanding your advertising, and really get in the game as far as building a world-class brand. So I consider that to be one of the first essential stepping stones in building a world-class organization. Not so much for the reason that maybe people think. So, you know, I think when people think of 100K, they think, oh, my income will be set, you know, like everything will be, you know, I'm going to be in good shape. But you learn very quickly, obviously, in business that, you know, there's so many other elements that are important in building something that's sustainable, that's going to stand the test of time. And to me, being able to get help is a make or break, because one of the biggest reasons for business failure is burnout of the owner. So I consider that to be make or break. And I consider the ability to pay to get eyeballs on your business to be make or break. So it's like you get to that 100K mark and chances are you're going to be able to stay in the game and then springboard into something extraordinary.
That's cool. How quickly were you able to hire full-time or part-time people for your business?
Yeah, definitely. So I hired my first VA actually when I was getting started for an hour a week right away. I started with someone for an hour a week. And then I think it was by the end of year one that I had someone for about 30 hours, you know, and now I have a team of seven. So, you know, but I think one of the things, and this is probably a whole nother episode, maybe we can come back together and have this conversation. You know, I think a lot of times people think about hiring, they think that's something I'll do when. And it's something that they're like planning for and hoping for in the future. And they think if they just work hard enough and if they just grow enough, they'll get to a place where they can hire. And I really try to instill the mindset of, you know, hire first, and that's what will be the catalyst for growth. Because I think most people wait far too long and they're so burnt out by the time that they do that the opportunity is really missed.
A lot of people use the excuse that they can't go find another job because they already have a job and they're working so many hours, you know, or they can't do this because they're doing that. And she took those excuses and turned them into inspiration. And so what excuses do you have that you've been, you know, blaming certain things here and there? And how can you use those for inspiration in the new year? That's the question.
And what can you do to better yourself in a way that you are proud of yourself for your accomplishments? I think that's the most important thing. You're not doing this for other people. You're doing it for yourself. Mm-hmm. And once you realize that, it becomes a hell of a lot easier to begin the achievement process, because you don't have to go, I did this because Mary's pissing me off, or I'm going to get back at my ex or my, you know, I mean, just don't. This is for you. New year is for you. It's new year, new person, new challenges, new collaborations, new friendships, new relationships. Get new.
Yeah. And her $0 to $100,000 blueprint, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't get too into it on the show, and I definitely want to have her back so that she can get into it in a detailed way. But I can tell you, I signed up for it to take a look at it. And the PDFs that you get, the coaching videos that you get, I mean, if you follow her method, and that's the key, right? So she can give you all the advice in the world, but if you don't take it and use it and do it, then it doesn't matter.
And where, how can people find our advice, Jen?
Our advice?
Yeah.
By going to our website.
Exactly. And?
And subscribing.
And get them a Learning Academy and subscribing. I mean, this is the new year. Invest in yourself a little bit. Go for a little bit of gold.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so the thing, you know, at the beginning of the show, we were talking about that Motivator app and how it just charges you and whatever, whatever, right? But what they don't do is they don't give you the tools. So they don't say, okay, here's how much water you should be drinking a day. Here's how much water you should be drinking a day. Here's how much exercise you should be doing. Here's how much what you should be eating. They're not giving you a blueprint or a map. Whereas if you get the Gittimer Learning Academy, and I think that's where you were going with that, Jeffrey, is you're going to give people the tools exactly how to succeed as a salesperson and sales manager.
You're going to get information that you can turn into money. So as we depart from you from this very first New Year's show, I would only challenge you to go to the Gittimer Learning Academy.com, subscribe, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. It's amazing.
Sell or die podcast.com.
And figure it out for yourself. This is a great opportunity for you to make it on your own, even if you're on a team. And your boss will be happy with you. You'll be happy with yourself. Your family will love you. And they'll all live happily ever after.
So I love that. So I want to give you a quick Yes Attitude update, Jeffrey. A bunch of people wrote videos and film videos and posted videos on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And we have decided, because of the holidays and a lot of people emailed into you to say, please give me more time. We have decided to make it a slightly different contest. All of those people have been rewarded just for participating already. But if you go to your Facebook page and go to the pinned post, which is the post that's automatically mm-hmm. at the top, it will tell you all the rules you need in order to participate in this contest. And the cool thing is you could win a $35,000 value day in Charlotte with Jeffrey. So you'll see his library, you'll come to our studio,
film
maybe
some stuff.
You'll be on Sellered Eye,
you'll get advice from Jeffrey. Sales advice. I mean,
exactly.
It's a pretty good deal.
It's going to be a cool day. I'll make sure to be here that day for sure.
Yeah. But listen, here's the challenge. You have to make a video. There's some steps to enter, and you have to go through the steps.
Yes. But in order to even potentially make that video now, there's some other opportunities you need to take care of first. So you can find out all those details on your Facebook page. You'll be promoting it on LinkedIn, Twitter, all the social. It'll be out there.
Yeah. But right now, to get the information, where do I go, Jen?
Your pinned Facebook post. It's at the very top of your Facebook page.
Their Facebook page or ours?
No, yours. Yeah. So if they search for Gittimer in Facebook and they click on your name, it'll be the top post.
Go, go. Okay, so thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah.
This has been an absolute
pleasure.
I'm
glad we're back. Yeah, I'm really glad we're back in the country. We're ready to rock.
Yep.
And this is going to be a great year.
All is well, and my name is Jeffrey Gittimer, and I'm the author of The Little Red Book of Selling and a bunch of other stuff. And
I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute.
And I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something brand new this week, this year, even if your ass falls off.
Oh, yeah.